films, and more can be found at KABU.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Portland Eco Film Festival series at the Hollywood Theater. The film this month is Sunu, screening Thursday, February 11th at 7:30 p.m. in its U.S. premiere. Seen through the eyes of small, mid-size, and large Mexican maize producers, Sunu knits together different stories from a threatened rural world. Sunu reveals how maize and everything it gives life to could be lost forever, and how we all could lose the capability to make important choices unless we act soon. Edna Vasquez will perform before the film. Again, that's the U.S. premiere of Sunu as part of the Portland Eco Film Festival on Thursday, February 11th, 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio, the program of, by, and for working people. Your hosts tonight are Jamie Partridge and myself, John Walsh. We're going to go outside of the city today. We're going to go to rural Oregon and talk about what's going on, making national news, but going on for a long time before that, with militias and the stuff you've been reading about from Harney County and the Malheur Wildlife Refuge. Here with us in studio to talk about that is Mike Edera, who's with the Rural Organizing Project. Welcome, Mike.
Well, thank you.
And maybe we could start, if you give our listeners an idea about your background and the ROP work and where we're coming from on this stuff.
Sure. Well, I've been involved in the ROP since 95, the Rural Organizing Project. I was living in rural Oregon in western Washington County, about as far as you could get off the paved road as I could. And that was a period when the right-wing Christian Oregon Citizens Alliance was conducting anti-gay ballot measures in small towns around the state. And I got involved in the local struggle and then got involved in the ROP. And then I met my wife, Marcy, who was the founder.
So when did ROP start again?
It started around 92.
Okay.
And it was a rural response, again, to these anti-gay ballot measures. That was the first really rise of this extreme right that we really saw in Oregon.
And then at a later time, you responded to the anti-immigrant right-wing movements within the state.
Yeah, we always, during that struggle against the anti-gay ballot measures, we made real connections with PECUN. And PECUN was the Farm Workers Union because they they made a point to support this. And so we always work mutually with PECUN, and we feel that the same bad actors that we originally ran up against were doing the anti-immigration stuff.
And ROP is in Oregon only, or elsewhere too?
It is in Oregon only, yes.
But statewide,
it is statewide. So what we have is it's a network of small community groups we call human dignity groups, and we're linked together with some staff out of Scappoose, and the human dignity groups are autonomous. They decide what they're going to do, but they sometimes take direction from the staff, and get involved in local issues, and they get involved in statewide issues.
Okay, so tonight we're talking about militias, and how did the militias emerge in Oregon? What's their background more widely? Where is this thing coming from?
Well, I think a lot of people are surprised to hear we've got militias. You know, I thought that was somewhere else. But the roots of the militia movement, we've had armed militias in this country since the end of the Civil War. But the roots of this current iteration of it were in the late 70s, after the Civil Rights Movement had instituted a lot of change, And the segregationists tried to go back to the drawing board, and they created something called the Posse Comitatus. And that was a movement, a rural movement, that that believed that the county, that the federal government had no right to enforce laws in states and counties, and that this the sheriff was the highest authority in the land. And they actually did a lot of work trying to work with farmers who were being foreclosed in the 70s and made some inroads there. But being the kind of folks they are, they wound up in shootouts with law enforcement, and that movement sort of went under the radar, but has been around since. But that's the real root of it.
So is that is connected with, or it's separate from the Ku Klux Klan, for example?
Yes. It was a different, it was generated out of the West and maybe Arkansas too, but it was separate from the Ku Klux Klan, although Ku Klux Klan people were involved. After their shootouts, they reconfigured things. And in the 90s, there was like a very seminal meeting where Posse Comitatus people came together with Aryan Nations folks and Ku Klux Klans, and they created a movement called the Militia Movement. And they wanted to be under the radar. They didn't want their white supremacy politics to be front and center. They really pushed a lot of the conspiracy theories that were going around at the time that have continued, you know, about the UN coming in with black helicopters and the government wanting to take everybody's guns. And that movement grew until the Oklahoma City bombing. So they always seem to wind up with something like that. But,
you say until the Oklahoma City bombing.
Yeah, and then again, it went down below the radar. But once President Obama was elected, and in conjunction with this incredible rise of right-wing media that is exponentially greater than it was even in the early 90s, social media and all other forms, the militia movement started growing again in 2008 and has really gone since then.
So if we're talking about what's going on today, or I should say maybe this year and last, Harney County and Josephine, sure, specifically in Oregon, and you've been there, right?
Yes.
We're talking about firsthand observation.
Yes.
So what is the agenda of these groups now? What is the current mode they're in?
Okay, so there are a number of agendas, and there are a number of cross currents. I went to the original march that they had in, that the militias called the Pacific Patriot Network, a network of militias called in Burns to protest the resentencing of a couple ranchers who were convicted of burning BLM land. And so they organized a protest on January 2nd.
BLM being?
Bureau of Land Management. Sorry, I'm
federal.
Using all these.
Feds, yeah.
A lot of the land out there is owned by the federal government. Most of the land is.
Yeah.
And the Bureau of Land Management is the big landowner in that country. And at that march, there were there was a group called the Oath Keepers, which is more public, it's above board, it seeks to enlist veterans and former law enforcement into a kind of public service / militia. They do disaster preparedness. They've been involved in armed standoffs too. Then there's another group called the Three Percenters, and they're much more under the radar, much more committed to armed struggle. A lot of them were in Burns, out of Idaho. And then the third component is Amon Bundy and his friends,
who are the ones now occupying the wildlife.
That is correct. Yes,
or leading that occupation.
And they actually surprised all their comrades and caused a lot of frustration because no one knew they were going to do that occupation, except.
Mm-hmm. Could you back up a little bit and sure. talk about what happened with Ammon Bundy's father, Clive Bundy,
yes.
2 years ago, was
right.
it?
Right, yeah.
Which kind of gave them a sense of what they might be able to accomplish.
Right. So Clive and Bundy, Ammon Bundy's dad, has a ranch in Nevada. And again, it abuts on Bureau of Land Management land. And ranchers all have these grazing contracts with the Bureau of Land Management. They're very reasonable, very cheap. Clive and Bundy hadn't paid his fees for years and owed $1 million to the BLM. They sought to repossess his cattle, and they put out a call nationwide. Come here and defend me against government overreach. It's going to be another Waco if I don't get defense. And then militia people from all over the country came and set up an armed encampment at the Bundy Ranch. And they faced off the federal government. And basically, the BLM returned their cattle and kind of walked away from the situation.
So it's one thing to do that, to have that standoff and wind up kind of back to the status quo before. Bundys are still on the same land, yes, with the same cattle, and feds went, right, back wherever they came from. But now we're talking about a group coming in where they were not,
yes,
seizing something.
Yes.
And it's quite different.
It's different in a certain sense.
Okay, so where are they headed with this? Why are they trying to provoke a reaction from the federal government?
Well, this is speculation, but I think there is some strain in there that wants to provoke a reaction to the federal government, from the federal government. There's also, I think, where the Bundy and his friends are much more connected with the issue of privatizing federal land than the other militia people, who are much more into guns and conspiracy and fight the government. But they're all talking about privatization of federal land, and they put it in the sense of, oh, the feds are taking land from poor ranchers, loggers, and miners. But where they're going with it, I think, is they want to create a base. I think what Amon Bundy said, we should take him at face value. He wants to create a base there, and he's already has people out in in Malheur County helping organize resistance to the new Ochoco Monument. If you look at the map, we look at this map and we look at it from the point of view from Portland, but I think it's interesting to look at it from the point of view of Salt Lake City. You know, and they look at that area and they say, there's no reason that should be Oregon, you know.
So land grab. Who has, yep, the use of the land is the primary, yep, agenda.
They figure it's their time to push that out. I mean, if you look at where the Republican Party is at, where local politicians in Nevada and Arizona have given, and Idaho particularly, have given a lot of cover to this kind of stuff. They figure this is the time to struggle for privatization.
So there's an economic context for this, and we're, yep, talking about areas that have been depressed economically from, yeah, where they were previously. I mean, what's happening that, yeah, allows this sort of thing to flourish?
Well, it's happening within the context of a depressed rural Oregon that's been in a recession since the 80s. Nothing has taken it out of the recession. There have been no recovery in rural Oregon since the 80s. Where people used to go from high school to the lumber mill, that's no longer an option. Paid working class jobs are much more scarce. And there has been no replacement. In fact, probably the best economic engine in Harney County is the Malheur Wildlife Refuge for working people.
I've seen reports that that county, decades ago, had the highest per capita income in Oregon because of these mill jobs.
Yeah.
And so people have seen a huge decline in their standard of living.
Now it's 30% in a generation lower than Portland, the median income.
Medium income.
Yeah. So, yeah, and this is all over Oregon. This is what the Rural Organizing Project has been, we've been trying to call attention to for two decades. Wherever we are, in Western Oregon, it's the even more pronounced loss of timber jobs. And there isn't really for various reasons, the political representation in rural Oregon is furthering this economic, repression, you know, basically because of Republican politics.
They won't, for example, support a $15 minimum wage.
They will not support a $15 minimum wage.
Or probably not even $13.
However, the Rural Organizing Project does.
We do support a $15 an hour minimum wage, and we know there is a lot of support for that. And one of the things that, you know, just speaking from the point of view of the Rural Organizing Project, is that we've been crosswise with the militia since April, when they did another armed encampment in southern Oregon, and we did some good organizing against them. And our, it's a very small organization, and our one staffer out of Cottage Grove, who does a lot of the home, town visits, has been followed, threatened. Her car's been tampered with. People have warned her to take security measures. Serious people have warned her to take security measures. So that's put us off our game. I mean, we made a decision in early part of the year to support the $15 an hour minimum wage, and we have not been able to do that. So this is where having a free-floating fascist movement comes right in. It disrupts and interrupts progressive politics.
There have been reports also out of Burns about people being followed, surveilled, yes. Folks showing up outside other people's homes.
Yep. When I was there last time, the watering hole called the Pine Room, where everybody hangs out, there was a gang of guys outside, armed, open carrying, they'd obviously been drinking and smoking and hanging out in front of the bar. Well, we weren't going in, but, this really had that Mussolini style feeling to me. There are people from Idaho, particularly, 3% are stickers all over the town. The sheriff's been followed. His wife's been threatened. The judge has been followed. And basically the federal employees were pulled out of the refuge a week before the march because they were all getting threats. Hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about the experience that you had in Josephine County leading up to this, the threats to your organizer? But you say you did some good work. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so in Josephine County, again, it was one of these issues. There was a family out in the woods who had an old mining claim and were messing things up and cutting corners, and the BLM gave them a cease and desist, for kind of unregulated construction on their site. There's a lot of ecological damage to streams that gold miners are doing out there. So that BLM was trying to, protect the land, and they went crying to the Oath Keepers, help, we're going to be wiped out by, like, Waco style again. And so this group, the Oath Keepers, really coordinated that. And they are very well organized in Josephine County. They actually get some county funding for disaster relief preparedness. They do highway maintenance. They worked on keeping upkeep on the fairgrounds. So they really have their game going in Josephine County. They are moving themselves into the establishment.
Are they able to do that because there's a reduction in funding for public service?
Yes. Josephine County has failed its public service levies repeatedly, has virtually no... if you were out in the woods and you called 911, you get a message.
Are the Oath Keepers in Josephine folks who live there in that county?
And so they actually, the Oath Keeper organizer there, Joseph Rice, is a pretty smart grassroots organizer. And they have a local presence. And so... they were totally shocked when we were able to organize a counter presence, and they had never heard of the ROP, and they personalized it on our supporter, our staff person, and we did some protests, and we did a big press conference where we got local business people, so conservative business people and former Republicans, to say this is not how we handle things. We don't grab guns. We can figure this out. And since then, we were targets.
Well, I think that's an important point, because I've seen multiple quotes in various news sources of someone saying the issues are the right issues, but the way these guys are going about it is wrong. These are people in rural Oregon. So there is an agenda here, or a program, maybe is a better word for it, that's been hijacked, that these guys are exploiting very effectively for their power. So what's the way of constructing an alternative to that that does meet the need, that does address the genuine issues without playing into the hands of...
Yeah. Well, we really do have to challenge that narrative that you do hear. You're very correct. You hear people in Harney County say, some people say, well, I don't like what they're doing, but at least they're bringing some issues. Well, actually, they're not bringing any issues. They're bringing the wrong issues to the fore. If all the ranchers had free rein on the Maller wildlife, it would be a dust bowl in a year, And there would be no new employment. There would be more employment if they opened a new McDonald's there. So we have to talk about what rural Oregon really needs. It needs jobs. It needs public investment. And that's the only way new economic growth is going to happen there.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Labor Radio, and we've got Mike Edera of the Rural Organizing Project here with us talking about the militias in Southern Oregon and the movement in general, and how progressives can organize in this situation.
So how do we put that alternative agenda together, the public investment, economic development agenda for rural parts of the state?
Well, we're really making that. We're really trying to have that discussion, and our tactics are to have living room discussions in every community where we ask people what their priorities are, where we try to raise some consciousness about the roots of the economic crisis. So we're having that discussion right now. We're starting to look at this in a different way. While we support many, in fact, any progressive economic initiative that our comrades in the city are working so hard on, but we also look at it from the rural perspective, and we want to see how this issue flies. We want to say, Portland would not have a boom if there wasn't rural Oregon. If there weren't the mountains, the forests, the land, this would be just another town. And this is our peculiar advantage in Oregon, is water, timber, soil. And that has to be supported. And that has to come from urban areas, and there has to be revenue sharing. So we're thinking of that, but this is actually a time to bring that out, because struggle is when people listen to things.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned also building community. Can you talk about that a little bit more? I know you had some specifics in the case of Burns.
We're about people meeting around their kitchen table. That's how we organize, and we saw very clearly in our trips into Burns that Burns was becoming just a battleground for these outside forces. And the people in town were really closing down. Our conversations with pastors and local people were changing week by week as people got more frightened. And it's turning around a little now. But so we have identified one thing. Anybody in Portland or anywhere who wants to help, who wants to do something effective, can do very simply is help some of the fundraisers that we've and nonprofits that we've identified in Burns. And we're particularly working on a fundraiser for cancer patients that they are having in February, and it's called Can Cancer, and they're raising money for it that stays in the community, and it's for patients who need money to do trips to go to get treatment or. And so, in fact, it's very. We talked with the organizer of that fundraiser, and she was so sweet. She said, "Words cannot express how appreciative our community is for your support. Just the mere mention of your concern brought many of my coworkers, cancer survivors, and community members to tears." Someone mentioned it's like they're the peace militia. So these people are like really in battle, and anybody who's going to, give them some support, they're pretty appreciative. So if you've got $8 and you've got a thank you card, you can mail it to Harney District Hospital, and that's Attention Savannah Ball, B-O-L-L, and that is 557 West Washington, Burns, Oregon, 97720, and just mail them an $8 check for the Can Cancer fundraiser. And so we're trying to create person-to-person dialogue here, and we're also mobilizing to protest this.
So the rural organizing project didn't really have a presence in Burns prior to this?
We had a presence years ago. In fact, Marcy, my wife, went mm-hmm. down there. The first time she went down there was to talk about the Oklahoma City bombing.
Oh, no kidding.
So there is a long presence there. But in the last few years, our groups kind of ebb and flow, and this one's kind of... Mm-hmm. It's 5 hours, and there's nowhere else on your agenda, so it's been left to the side.
Yeah.
And so we have some old friends there that we were able to talk to, and now we're making new friends. But we did not have a group active at the time.
So have you participated in these community meetings? I know they've been almost weekly.
Yes.
Yeah. What are you thinking about those?
So our staffer was at the one that the militia held after the march, which was where they were tearing their hairs out, saying, "We didn't know Ammon Bundy was going to do this." So they were totally flummoxed. And the few supporters they had acquired from Harney County were furious with them. So that was the one I went to. Jess went to been to a couple of town meetings since that are organized by the sheriff and the judge, who is the highest county official. And they've done a great job of mobilizing the town against this. And the vast majority of people were saying, "Get out." Mm-hmm. There are a few people who slowly they're getting a few more supporters the longer they stay, but it's still the majority of folks are just, the vast majority are saying, "Get out."
Now, speaking of mobilization, ROP has one coming up, I think, in about a
week.
Yes. So.
Well, we're asking folks to take action on February 6th, Saturday. One of the great places to look for ongoing information about this and our mobilization is Rural Organizing Project Facebook page. We've got a bunch of researchers working with us, and we really have really good information, and we have information on our mobilization as we put it together. It's going to happen in 5 communities at this moment, but every day we're getting more. And if you want to do something in Portland, just what we're asking folks to do very simply is get you and your friend and maybe a few others, get out on the sidewalk, take a picture of yourselves with some signs saying "Bundy out" or whatever you want to say. We support the people of Burns and Mallor Refuge, public land. Take a picture of yourself and send it to the Rural Organizing Project, jess@rop.org. And we're going to do a bunch of Facebook pictures. So it's kind of, we put this mobilization together because people were chomping at the bit, and it's kind of a free rolling thing. Do it yourself, and we will support you in any way we can with support services. But the place to look for ongoing information on it is the Rural Organizing Project Facebook page.
All right. There's also a website for ROP, correct?
There is a website, ruralorganizingproject.org.
All right. So for those of you that are focused on what's happening in Harney County with this militia occupation, or just kind of reeling about the right-wing backlash that is sweeping our nation, whether it's the leadership of Donald Trump and his anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant rhetoric, or the fear factor in refugees coming into this country, look at an opportunity to focus locally on a local struggle and to actually build the progressive movement by supporting the people of Burns.
Yeah.
And also think about what economic interests are served by what activities.
Yes.
So if we see a land grab that serves a small number of people who are now the proprietors or at least the users of large amounts of land, that's a whole lot different than developing a sustainable local economy that has jobs for a majority of the population.
It's the opposite of it.
Yeah.
All right.
But you can't beat something with nothing, so we need a rural program.
Yeah, and I was telling Jamie while we're waiting for the show to start, with this militia thing reminds me of, given experience in Latin America, is the paramilitary groups that you see there, which are essentially private armed forces for large landowners oftentimes or large businesses other times. But it's a way of expropriating resources that should be public or should belong to many people and turning them over into the hands of a few.
Yes. And what's different here is it's self-organized. It's based on the ideology that the right wing has produced over these years, but it's completely about people who are working, people who are in these militias hate the idea of the minimum wage, hate any program that helps them, hate unions, and again, believe that their economic problems are due to the federal government or immigrants or refugees. So they have drunk the Kool-Aid, and they haven't quite hired out to the landowners directly yet, but that's the next step.
I've had an opportunity to really talk about this, but in the last...
And we're almost out of time.
Okay. Out of time. Maybe you could say just real quickly what you experienced with the Paiute tribe who claims the land and is working with the federal government in preservation of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge.
Well, the Paiute were very strong in reminding everybody that they have a existing treaty with the United States government and that is their land. And they have worked out some arrangements with BLM to protect their sites and allow access. But they're really strong. They were they were checking out this march. They were not buying it when I saw it. They were following it. They did not look amused. Mm-hmm. And they've made great statements. And we are sitting down with coffee for coffee with them very mm-hmm. soon. So
we want to thank Mike Atterbrough from the Rural Organizing Project for getting us updated about militias in Oregon, what's going on in Harney County, and prior to that, Josephine. So for Jamie Partridge, myself, John Walsh, for Mike, and for Mike, our engineer, thank you, Mike.
Thanks
thank you
lot.
All for listening, and we'll tune in next week, please.
Thanks.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.